The theater, the theater.
Bring out Louis!
Theater, theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater, theater.
Yo.
Well, hey there.
Hey.
Scott, do you remember when you used to open every episode with a bit of bump a bow?
Oh, did I?
Yeah, you used to have like a little like. Like every time. It was great.
I'll bring it back.
Bring it back.
I liked it. Bring back the bits. Pro Jimmy Schmidt's bits.
Speaking of being back, we're back.
We're back. So sorry.
We're back.
Yeah.
You guys remember We're Back, the movie?
No.
The dinosaur animated feature produced by Spielberg?
Oh, no.
Vaguely, yeah, vaguely.
And like Walter Cronkite is in it.
What?
Julia Child. It's like, yeah, it's like John Goodman.
Yeah, what? It's so weird. I need to see this.
Genuinely one of my favorite childhood movies. And it's about a kid who meets some dinosaurs that got brought to the future and were given some nice pills to be nice. And so they're nice and they can talk and he becomes buddies with them. But then this evil circus ringleader, who has a very scary circus, which really, a really demented circus that messed with me as a kid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now I'm remembering like captures this.
He captures the dinosaurs and makes them mean again for his show.
Oh.
And it's so good. It's so good.
I gotta watch
it. And the circus master is named Elon Musk. It's true.
It's true. That's his name.
Predicted him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The dinosaur movie when I was a kid, it was all about Land Before Time when I was a kid. I've never even heard of that movie.
Which
Land
Before
Time? Yeah, it might
be
a Bluth.
The first
it
one.
Might be a Bluth. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. But we don't have time for that.
No.
We don't have time because we're back.
We're back.
Baby.
Turn back the clock to the dawn of time and sing this song with me. That was a lyric from the movie, I think.
Okay. Aww,
I'll sing
lyrics.
It at the end.
Was it okay.
Yeah, I'll sing it at the end if I can remember it. But I haven't seen y'all over Zoom in a while, but I have seen you in real person.
We got to reunite. It was so nice. It was so nice. Just having a few drinks was nice, but then we went to the movies and
seeing Twisters was fun, but the God, that movie's terrible. I'm still mad about it.
We saw Twisters in 4DX.
That was fun.
Which was 2 hours of turbulence.
Yeah, but
I think it's hard for me with those movies, and I got into it with some of my students who really loved it. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I went to rehearsal the next day because I was in LA directing Love's Labor's Lost with the Shakespeare Youth Fest.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I got there the next day and some of them had seen my Letterboxd review. They follow me on Letterboxd.
And they
were like,
they
"You are so wrong." And I was like, "Oh. How? Like what, you know, what part do you not agree with?" And they were like, "You said the script is garbage." And I said, "Well, it is."
Yes.
And they went, "Well, I think it's, you know," and they kind of went off me and they're like, "It's hot people erasure." And I was like, "Okay, stop." First of all. And then my big take was, well, I'm from Kansas. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm from where tornadoes are kind of a constant part of your life.
We're created.
Yeah, yeah, that's where they were born.
They were invented. Right?
Yeah. Tornado Alley is where they were invented. And so by Zeus himself. Yeah. And so I was sort of one of those. It wouldn't be Zeus. It would be, who's the god of wind? I don't know. Look it up. I don't know. Look it up.
Go.
Someone, please, now.
I'm looking it up.
To me, it's all about like having a problem with every time they're like, hell yeah, another Twister. And I'm like,
Aeolus.
Yeah.
Aeolus.
Great. Of course it is. I'm sort of like, I get it. And I'm all for it. Make movies about whatever. They make earthquake movies. They make natural disaster movies all the time. A lot of people die in them. They made a Titanic movie. But there is that part of me that just thinks of the little towns that are getting destroyed every time they get pumped up about a tornado. That's all.
It's hard for me to enjoy that.
It just is. So
had your students seen The Ridge?
Aside, Huh?
Had your students seen The Ridge?
I think they watched it with their Gen X parents to, like, you know, to, like, go into the new one, and their parents were like, this is the best movie ever.
Yeah, so the hype killed it.
Yeah. But that's, you know, I don't know.
Right.
I'm still mad about it.
No, my issue was, I just thought it was cowardly. I was like, you're doing a story about, you know, natural disasters, and you don't mention climate change. You don't even bring it up.
They would have alienated half their audience.
Good.
Yeah, I know. I know. I know. I'm with you, but still.
Rather than,
but it's the same. It's the Tom Cruise thing where it's like, no, everyone has to come see my movie. Movies are back. I'm bringing them back, baby. Yeah. And it's like, oh, okay, calm down.
Yeah.
And I don't see Tom Cruise movies. I'm mad they spent as much time on him at the gymnastics competition at the Olympics.
Right.
It's like, stop looking at Tom Cruise.
He's our greatest movie star, but I understand. I understand the feeling.
I disagree. I'm our greatest movie star.
That's right,
T. You're right.
You're right.
Yeah, hey, friends, we're back, as we've been saying. And we, you know, there's a lot of, I'm sure, theater news. There's a lot of stuff going on right now. But we don't get to see each other very often anymore. I'm in Vermont now. So there's, it's just like fun when we get together. Even now it's hard to want to like hop into the topic. Cause I'm like, let's just talk for the next 4 hours.
Yeah, right?
Exactly.
But, we are going to hop in now, but I love you guys.
Love you back. And we love all of you. Everybody's listening. Love you.
Yeah.
Thanks.
We just lost our entire subscription.
Yeah,
Scott, there was something you had said before we started recording I wanted to say before I introduced the podcast, which is that Mike Lee has a new film coming out. Now, we covered a Mike Lee film, script slash director, screenplay slash director of Secrets and Lies.
Mm-hmm. And also Topsy-Turvy.
Topsy-Turvy.
Yeah.
He's got a new movie coming out this year. It's a 90-minute contemporary explorative piece, sort of a pseudo-spiritual sequel to Secrets and Lies. It's called Hard Truths.
Yes.
And, yes, it does have Marianne Jean-Baptiste of Secrets and Lies, who is the MVP of that movie. I mean, that movie's stacked and incredible. But
I have
that's very exciting.
Yeah, I was going to say I have the description here. Starring Hard Truths, starring Marianne Jean-Baptiste as a working-class woman whose emotional and physical health problems have metastasized into a profound, relentless anger.
Ooh.
That's it. I'll watch her do that all day long. So
yeah,
I'll watch her do anything. She can spin pizza.
She was the only reason. The only Law and Order that I watched extensively was the British one because she was on it.
I didn't know that existed.
Yeah, they did. They did.
Do they wear wigs?
Yep.
Do they really?
The barrister wigs?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, fuck absolutely. Yeah. I'm going to watch it now.
I'll
get BritBox just for that.
It had her and it had the guy that played Apollo on the reboot Battlestar Galactica, whose name eludes me right now.
No idea.
But he was really great. He's great in Battlestar Galactica, too.
Speaking of Battlestar Galactica, welcome to Theater Theater. Welcome to Theater Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by nerds.
Nights.
Made by three theater makers from the L.A. theater scene, one of whom is in Vermont right now. I am J. Bailey Bertram.
I'm C.J. Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
Tis true. And this season, we're trying our best to get together now and then.
Yes.
And to discuss and debate the intersection of theater and film.
Yes.
Now, we haven't really been doing that. And in all honesty, this week we're kind of not doing it again. And we are covering a film.
Yes.
We are.
Yes. Yeah.
But it is not about the intersection of theater and film. However, we are intersecting theater and film for this episode. So we're still in bounds, and I'm cool with it.
Yeah, yeah.
Our next couple episodes are a little more specific to, like, the actual intersection of these things. But yeah. I'm very glad to be talking about what we're talking about today. This was a CJ pick. CJ, What did you pick and why?
I picked Bathtubs Over Broadway. I was completely, completely unfamiliar with it. And then one night was hanging out with Friends of the Pod, Jay, Natalie, and Ian. And we were really high. And they were like, hey, have you ever seen this? Do you know what it's about? Have you seen this? Have you read about this? And I was like, no, I haven't. And it's fucking delightful, and I encourage everyone out there to see it. It's a story unlike any I have ever experienced in the theater world, yeah. To be honest.
Well, and yeah, and the second time watching it, I was just so much more emotionally invested. Like it's a really, we'll get into it, but it's a really I kind of teared up at the end.
Makes you feel good being a theater person, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a feel-good doc. It's a feel-good doc. A feel-good doc that, by the way, has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. Nobody has anything negative.
No shit.
Yeah, what would you say bad about it? Like, yeah. It was just like, and yeah, cool story. Absolutely.
I'll watch any documentary that has 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. And I know a lot of reviewers don't, like, review docs in the same way. So it has less of a chance of getting bad feedback. But when one allows, when you know the zeitgeist allows it to hit and maintain that 100% and you know never falter, I'm like, that's got to be a good doc. And mm-hmm. It absolutely lives up to it in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking Bathtubs Over Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
Had y'all seen this before?
I had randomly roommate, friend of the pod, Brian, and I had watched it one night when it was on Netflix.
It was on Netflix.
It was
randomly
on Netflix.
That's
for
right.
A while, and it popped up because, you know, I'm always doing documentaries. So it was like, new documentary you might want to watch. I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. Having no real idea what it was about. But it was, yeah, it's really cool.
And Siege, you were just introduced to it.
Yeah, I just stonedly watched it like a couple months ago when I was having a slumber party at their place. It was fun.
Yeah, I didn't do enough research to know. I know that it premiered at Tribeca in 2018, but I don't know if that's maybe where Netflix picked it up. Focus World obviously released it, but yeah. I don't know if they bought it from Tribeca or if they made it. I guess I could have done more of that research. But did you guys notice as the film starts, and then we should break it down so people know what it is. But mm-hmm. did you notice as it started who produced it? One of the mm-hmm. big name producers at the beginning of the film?
Who
was David it? David Letterman.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's in it.
No, the other one. Oh. The one who actually gets a screen title card at the beginning and they get their animation.
No.
I don't remember.
Blumhouse.
That's right.
Of you know, the
horror
Conjuring
fire.
Universe and such.
Yeah, they were
right. I was surprised.
Yeah. It was cool. I was about to say, I noticed that this was one of those projects that had, you know, 19 production companies associated with it, like, you know, a whole bunch of people through it. Yeah, totally.
Or I thought it was. And then you see Blumhouse pop up and you're like, oh, crap. Like,
this the 2018 Blumhouse, they're not quite what they...
I think they're still indie, but they're...
They are, but they weren't quite as big as they are now. Now they're...
Right,
now they're
still in
their,
like,
juggernaut, yeah.
Yeah, 6 years ago, they're only on their fourth Paranormal Activity, right? They're not. They haven't. Or something like that. But, you know, they have a movie every couple of years. I think they even did Whiplash.
Mm.
I think that was them.
You are correct. They were one of the production companies.
I might
be
wrong about this, but they did either Defy Bloods or Black Klansman.
Mm.
Oh.
I can't remember which one.
Okay.
I think it was Black Klansman. But so they have, like, you know, and then The Purge and they most recently had Megan and Five Nights at Freddy sort of back to back. They, you know, I mean, they're alive and kicking.
Yeah.
These days. I don't know. It was just cool to see them pop up at the beginning of this, especially in 2018. When they
absolutely.
Were
yeah. Yeah.
They weren't too cool for it is how it feels.
Right. Yeah. 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 Something so sweet and sort of pure.
Yeah. Yeah. CJ.
Yeah.
I know you miss me.
Yeah.
And I can't help but notice that you're you're tearing your hair out about it.
Yeah.
I think you might be having a bit of a breakdown, and I just want to console you with a bit of music.
Yes.
Would you like to hear it?
Yeah.
CJ's breakdown.
Comedy writer.
There it was. Okay, go ahead.
Been a while.
Comedy writer and former writer for the David Letterman Show, Steve Young, rediscovers the forgotten golden age of industrial musicals. Imagine money-glutted post-war America with a shit ton of insanely wealthy corporations that are just dying to be as cool as Broadway.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember back in the day when Letterman started doing that bit where it was Dave's Record Collection.
Yeah.
And that's how Steve Young, who was a writer and later a producer on the show, was tasked with going and finding wacky albums at, you know, personally owned record stores. So he would bring them in, and then that's how he discovered this world of industrial musicals. And yeah, he
and
noticed.
So for people
who
don't know, because I think it's worth mentioning, Scott,
sorry. No,
absolutely. And people should go look it up because they're hilarious. But Letterman used to show off, and you know, this continued through a lot of other late night, you know, Tonight Show picked it up. All the, you know, where you lift up a vinyl and sort of show off how ridiculous the title is or the whatever, and then he plays a bit of a song. And would just make fun of it, you know. And people do it with the articles, and they do it with whatever. But I think people should go look up videos of it because it's absolutely hilarious. It's also there's a bit of it in the doc as well, but it's totally worth watching.
Well, you know what it reminded me of? I don't know if anyone is up on season 2 of The Jinx, but
no,
there...
I haven't. What could that possibly be? Well, I know we've solved it. We know.
I know. But they just finished it out this last year, and they introduced, I can't remember the guy's name, but it was a friend of Robert Durst's that did porn cowboy music.
Sure.
And then I had never heard of that genre before. I didn't know it was a thing, but this guy made quite a fucking living off of it in the 70s and 80s. Yeah.
Yeah.
Porn cowboy music.
Hey.
I love it.
Everyone has their niche, you know?
Yeah.
Like, absolutely. One of the names of the song was like, Come on My Pillow or something. Like,
of course.
yeah.
And please, I would beg you not to make fun of his amazing talent and irreplaceable creative force in this world.
I'm not making fun of it. I'm just saying it is a genre. A genre that I have never heard of. Sorry, too much Paris Olympics. Genre.
Anyway, Scott, you were talking.
But just the bit led him into this world, and you know, then you discover all the famous people that were involved with it, the money that was involved with it, and I guess we should talk a little bit about what industrial musicals are and why they were done. But they were done from the 50s into the 80s.
Late 80s. I saw one that was at 89 or something. I think it was like a Hardee's musical or something.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And it was used for corporate events, usually for sales meetings or big manager meetings where they would bring everybody from across the country in, and they would do these huge presentations, and they would pay significant money. I think the one stat that got thrown out that blew me away was the one guy was talking about. I think it was Arco was doing doing one at the same time that My Fair Lady was opening on Broadway for the first time.
Wow.
And the budget for My Fair Lady was $440,000, and the budget that this dude was getting for the Arco industrial musical presentation was $3 million. And you're like, what? Why do Broadway? Why even bother going for Broadway? But it, you know, all these, you know, folks sort of fell into that, and it paid well. Like all the actors that we're talking about, like even Martin Short did Cheetah Rivera,
Florence Henderson,
Susan
Stroman.
A lot of great people did them, and they were like, it was great. You know, Martin Short was like, it was great. You got a regular paycheck. You were going to cool hotels. You were eating good food. And, you know, and you got to do your gig. You got to do your art. You got to sing. You got to dance. You got to do your thing.
One of my favorite quotes was, I think we knew we weren't going to become stars doing this, but it was just a wonderful way to pay the rent and to continue doing what we love. And I was like, God damn right.
Yeah. That's really it.
It was
right?
one of the leads from The Bathrooms Are Coming.
The Bathrooms Are Coming.
which was a bathroom fixture musical.
right. But yeah, it just the journey and Steve's journey as he gets more and more into it. And here's this dude who's, you know, high up in the entertainment world. He's writing for David Letterman for 25 years and he just becomes obsessed and fixated. And then the people that he gets into, like the fact that Jello Biafra from the Dead Kennedys is one of his record collecting buddies, they swap things. Like I just, and that he was in the final number too. Jello's in the final
number.
There's
a lot of actually, it's pretty amazing how many like Easter eggs are in that final number. It's pretty
cool. It's really great.
About that. But it is, it's kind of amazing as a physical media collector myself, who is not that obsessed, right? Like I enjoy finding finds at Goodwill and being like, gosh, this VHS of Ghost that was only sold at McDonald's, you know, stuff. Oh, is
The hardcore
really
ones,
Like I really love that kind of thing, but I don't scour eBay. I don't pay over like $20 for anything. You know, he is like outbidding people on eBay for these things and like really collecting. And there's even a guy, they interview a guy who's like, I used to try and buy them and I'd get outbid by this same dude and it was Steve Young every time.
I think his handle was like Steve Pants or something. Pants. That's what it was. No Pants.
Yeah, exactly. But it becomes an obsession out of a bit. It's a bit that becomes this thing where he's like, no, I want to own all of these. And in all honesty, like, I want to own some. He makes you want to go out and start trying to find them.
Yes.
Well, that was the other thing, too, is like looking at some of those album covers, like the artwork. Yeah. I mean, that's what we've lost in the digital age and the tapering off of physical media. Is, you know, the glory, you know, I'm older than you guys, but I'm the glory of just getting a CD back in the day and having a cool booklet in the CD that had, and you had the artwork and you could hold it and it was tactile and but just some of the artwork on some of those vinyls were just gorgeous and like really fascinating
and hilarious sometimes. And hilarious, like on purpose, like campy, like silly on purpose.
Yeah, there was a lot of cool winking and nodding. And then of course, he gets into following all the composers who got pulled
Michael
into
Brown.
It. Michael Brown was the big one that he
finally got to meet. Well, it was the composers from Fiddler on the Roof, too, right?
Yeah.
That's the other side of it, is that then you have these massive composers, directors, lyricists, all of the above, like designers coming in, getting paid, like you were saying, Scott, like getting paid legit paychecks.
I can pay the rent paychecks,
and some of it, and this is sort of what the documentary starts breaking down, it's like some of it was good, like some of it is like some of the music is like golden era style,
beautifully orchestrated
stuff.
And recorded, like
and I think the most interesting piece of the whole puzzle is the opening line that Steve Young gives, which is, I wrote it down very quickly as I watched it, so I know this is not verbatim, but it's close. He basically says, none of this should have happened. We were never meant to hear these songs. We were never meant to see these shows, but we tricked history and saved them.
Yeah.
And that's the heart of the documentary, is that it's this guy being like, this is the most ephemeral thing in theater ever because they can't be reproduced. They can't be, it's not like people can buy the rights to them. Why would you want to? Why right. would you ever want right. to do a Crest toothpaste, right. you know, musical? But that's one of the most interesting ones where you're like, oh, there's a plot here.
Yeah, there's like, they're telling stories.
There's like a real plot. They just happen to turn to you every once in a while and go, we should brush our teeth, brush your teeth, you know, or like, my love is so minty for you or whatever, yeah. you know, whatever it may be. And I think that's kind of what his obsession is all about, right? Is like yeah. this thing that like shouldn't really exist. It did exist. People, a whole subculture of people were a part of this world, and then it's gone.
Yeah.
It's theater in its purest fucking form, to be
that's
honest.
It. It exists, yes. That's it.
It exists. It's just like Samuel Beckett. He came to drama and came to the theater because out of a need to do it. And there was the need to do it and the need to tell these stories and make it as, you know, and they were also talking about the difference just in corporate America that doesn't exist like it did in the 50s right. and 60s, where people spent their entire careers with a corporation. And so a corporation was invested in, making sure that they were part of the family, that they were all, that their employees sure. were part of it. And, you know, so to do these events and celebrate them, you know, a lot of it reminded me of, I'm sure you guys both have this, where you'd have pep rallies or student assemblies and the football team would come out and they would try and do skits and they would all be like mm-hmm. inside jokes and that nobody else would get. But, right. you know, but the inside jokes, that it was built for that. For that to, right. to be
well, and it made them all feel like, it made the people in the audience feel like fucking superheroes.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
it was, I loved the whole concept of like theater kids making these nerdy ass execs feel really cool because this was this musical yeah. about yeah. them. Like yeah, that yeah. was fucking great.
Absolutely.
They do a lot of animations throughout where they show the audience in animated form and it's just, they're all the exact same guy with glasses.
And yeah. yes.
And then they show you pictures, real and pictures. All, and yes. that's
all, they
like,
all
you're like, just like, oh, it is. They're yes. they carbon all copies like, of each other. But they all have huge, goofy ass smiles on their faces.
Yeah. yeah. yeah.
No, everyone loves you know, theater.
And I think that's, like I was saying, like that's the heart of this documentary and why it wins so many awards, which we'll talk about, and like why it sticks with you a little bit, is it's not just about this obsession this guy has and he's going and he's finding things. It's a world I did not know existed, and I am a huge theater nerd.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And I think and that like, that's what. Yeah, that's exactly what Steve Young discovered. Like, why aren't we talking about this? Like, why doesn't
right.
this...
And the fact that it affected so many people and also, like, brought joy to so many people and then brings joy now to Steve Young and then getting to do the big performance and everything. Like, it is... It's just... It's really full of heart. I think yeah. that's what makes yeah. a good documentary in general.
Can I share my favorite lyrics that they didn't actually say, but I read them because they were showing the inside of a cover and they were showing some of the lyrics.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was for a surgery supplies company called Surgopack or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, yeah.
And then yeah. two lines of lyrics that were on the screen, but they didn't read were, enjoyed my appendectomy, loved my hysterectomy.
Oh my God. Jesus Christ.
It just made me laugh. I was like, well, why yeah. are they not reading those out loud?
What was the other one that I thought was so funny? Oh, it was the one about the molding silicon. It was silicon molding, and the company was like, we use it for 100 different things, and the song should cover all 100 things. And the guy was like, we had to figure it out.
It was Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yeah.
That's right.
Okay, we're doing a patter song. Okay. but yeah, I just thought that was awesome. Also, just to digress for just a second, because mm-hmm. we often talk about muggles. In terms of non-entertainment people, and Steve Young,
theater folk.
Steve Young referred to them as civilians.
Yeah.
At the beginning, right. he's talking about just how jaded he is, and like
I mean, his right, comedy button is broken.
No, yeah, it's like yeah, I can't be. It's like you know. So when I'm talking to civilians, and I thought of all three of us. It's like yeah. but yeah, and just you know, but just like. him going around to all those sort of divey, you know, small storefront New York record shops. Yeah. And, you know, all this
and
stuff.
It made me hate New York less.
Yeah.
No, right. Yeah, New York has its character. We talk a lot of shit on New York, but really we're talking shit on Broadway. There's culture there and stuff, right?
Oh, of course, of course.
I'm kidding. Of course there is.
It's a little bit. I had one of the greatest 72 hours of my life in Greenwich Village, where I didn't even leave the village.
You were in Greenwich Village, though.
Yeah, for 3 days. It was amazing. I don't think I slept. Maybe a couple hours. But I just went crazy. It was great.
I forgot what I was saying. Mm. It was really good.
Yeah, no, we were talking about record stores in New York and
culture. It wasn't that
just
good.
Flipping that.
The record stores in New York are funny because they interview or they like follow him into some record stores where he's like, "Hey, have you ever heard of this thing?" And they're always like, "No." And I'm like, that is how I get treated in every record store I go into. I'm like, "Hey, do you have any Joni Mitchell?" And they're like, "I don't even know who that is." And you're like, "What are you
talking about?" It's like, okay, come on. It's
No, but it is funny because they're all just like, "No, man, I don't know. I just work here." And he's like, "Oh, okay, well, here's my number. Call me if you
call
find
me
one.
If you find like, one." Okay. Yeah, somebody once said that your best record shop is find the independent record shop that's run by an old dude that has young people working there, because the old dude will keep shit in balance, keep things, you know, more up to date or go further back than, you know, 5 years.
You guys ever seen High Fidelity?
Oh, yeah.
It's been a while.
Oh, yeah.
I love that movie. Also, there's a Hulu miniseries, I think with Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be good. And it's also, there's a musical.
Is there a High Fidelity musical?
I think I remember hearing that.
And is
it set in England or America?
I think it is. I think it is set in England. I think it's straight off the Nick Hornsby or whatever Hornby novel. But it's Tom Kitt, who wrote the music to Next to Normal.
Oh, right on.
He also wrote the other half of the music to Bring It On.
Okay.
Oh, God.
No, but it's okay. It's okay. That was a pay for play. That was a play for pay.
That should have been a corporate musical. I might
have appreciated
it more.
I'm so glad you said that, CJ, because while watching this, I had this sort of moment of like, what we're doing now, recreating all these movies on on Broadway, is like not much better than this. Like a Crest musical, a Wheat Thins musical. You know, like there's something just as ridiculous about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I agree.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's musicals that are made for muggles too, that are like, "I love that movie. I'm going to go see the play." You know what I mean?
That's what I mean. Yeah. They're both the same, where they're catering to a mind that We should say it here.
Say it.
Theater is not for theater people.
It's
kind of just not.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Yes.
Because theater people will forever watch it with a dissective eye and like all this stuff.
Sure.
Art should be dissected, but also like we're making it for muggles in theory.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Most film is made for muggles in theory.
Mm-hmm.
There are some filmmakers who are like, "I want everyone to know what I'm like." You know, Nolan is very like, "I'm going to use this exact lens so that every every director knows that I'm the best." You know,
Yeah.
But for the most part,
you're right.
Yeah,
they could have been the Pete Buttigieg of musicals back in the day. Maybe all those execs were like, "You know what? I need to go check out some Shakespeare or something else."
You have to explain that because it's been so long since you've referenced that.
Pete Buttigieg, back in the day in 2020, Pete Buttigieg brought one of my old friends from high school to the light side. And even though like all of the lefties didn't love him, she liked him, and now she's totally not a Republican anymore and not right wing anymore. Pete Buttigieg was her in.
Nice.
So, Back to the Future, the musical, if that's your in to make you see some maybe better theater, then great. It's your Pete Buttigieg musical.
And listen, you're absolutely right, Bailey, and especially for Broadway. And listen, we smack on Broadway a lot.
Broadway's, Illinois is there.
Broadway's trying to make money.
Yeah.
I want to make money with my art. I don't have any problem with that. I just feel like sometimes it feels like a cash grab, and that's where, you know, I would...
Sure.
Instead of doing one Back to the Future, the musical, spend a quarter of the money and do something new and cool, and, you know, spend that somewhere. That's my only gripe.
With you.
I agree. You know, I agree.
Because then you get shit like Beetlejuice, the musical, which I just...
And then you have a weird congresswoman jerking off her boyfriend in the crowd.
Yeah.
That was hot, though. Stan a legend.
Vaping next to pregnant women. I mean, it's great. Yeah,
we love
the people that run our country are awesome, y'all.
I don't know if you know about my politics, but I'm really into her.
Boebert?
Oh, no. And no, sadly, that'll be our last podcast.
Yeah, bye.
Last episode.
And bye.
Bye.
I've been listening to this soundtrack a little bit. Have you guys?
Yeah, I went and listened to some tracks.
Harnick and Bach have some stuff on, you know what I mean? Like, it's like pretty legit. It's pretty fun. People should check it out. It's on Spotify.
I mean, you know, and some of those lyrics are clever as shit. They really, really are. Funny. Yeah. Across the board.
My bathroom.
Can I tell y'all about some of the awards?
Yeah.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Because it was really well received from day one.
Really well received. And in fact, is a piece of the Blumhouse puzzle in terms of why they grow as much as they do. Because this is like pretty much their only, that I can see on this list. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to do more research. But this is like their only festival player that Blumhouse has really been attached to. Like Whiplash probably did some festivals, Black Klansman probably did some festivals, but at this time, this is like they hadn't done, you know, anything. So except, you know, some horror films. So released at Tribeca, and it gets a top six pick in the Robert De Niro top six. So De Niro apparently does like a you know, top six picks for the Tribeca Film Festival, and he put this in his picks.
Okay.
The jury was obsessed with it. If you look at the cover on their website, it lists all these things. Winner of Tribeca Film Festival 2018 documentary, winner of best documentary Nantucket Film Fest, top 10 audience favorite at Hot Docs, winner of the jury award at Naples, winner of most popular documentary at VIFF, winner of Heartland International Film Festival, winner of the Sidewalk. I don't know what the fuck that is. Sidewalk Film Festival. I didn't know that this existed. Audience Award
either.
For Best Documentary Feature. Traverse City Film Fest, Nashville Film Fest, Alamo Drafthouse Lost Weekend, Teaneck, Cinema Eye, AARP Movies for Grownups Award.
Nice.
Which AARP. It was nominated for but lost.
Aw.
Interesting. Anyway, all kind of cool. It was it did extremely well. People loved it, and it has like you said, CJ, people still bring it up sometimes. They're like, "Have you seen this documentary? Yeah. You looking for a fun doc? This one's good." It still gets passed around 6 years later. That's good staying power for a doc, you know.
Yeah.
Also, it's 85 minutes long, y'all. Like
it's quick.
It's just a nice little sit, and you'll not regret one moment of it.
Did y'all rent it? Or did you
I rented
it
on Amazon.
I couldn't find
it. Yeah, I did the same.
Anymore.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
I thought it'd still be on Netflix. It wasn't. So
yeah,
you might
that's
have to spend
right.
a couple of.
I can Venmo y'all.
Yeah, we'll Venmo any listener who watches it.
No.
CJ will Venmo any.
With all my LA theater money that I have.
Yeah, right. Correct. Exactly.
Maybe
yeah,
we should sell out and start making garbage musicals.
Okay.
Let's do
about
it.
Based off of movies.
I have maybe one, and I just call it Slut. Just
what's
slut
that based on?
It's just a musical about
is that the Showgirls musical?
I'm still waiting for My Bitch Ex-Wife.
My Bitch Ex-Wife.
That sounds great, too.
We just made $1 million.
While we're on this topic, I wanted to ask y'all a question. What corporate musicals would you want to see today?
Meta.
I have some ideas. Meta, okay.
I want to see Meta, the musical. And it's Social Network made into the David Fincher film Social Network made into a musical.
With Jesse Eisenberg.
And it's called Meta. Yeah. And it's really meta. It's like really meta theatrical. Like, no, it's not Jesse Eisenberg. It's Mark Zuckerberg. We get Zuckerberg.
Ooh, we actually get we hire Zuckerberg.
To be in it.
And
yeah.
it's to play Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah,
all
right.
It's all so you have to watch it from inside the metaverse.
That
and
might
it
be.
Ends with Jesse Eisenberg and Zuckerberg kissing.
Yes.
Done.
Each other.
Done.
Yeah.
Sold.
Yeah.
Sold. Sold.
Okay, so I have a list, and some of them aren't corporations. I guess they're companies within. But so, Tampax, but a drag show.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, like the sport ones.
Yeah, Summer's Eve, but a drag show.
Great.
White Castle.
White Castle would be great.
Viagra, but a drag show.
Yes.
Preparation H.
But a drag show.
Nintendo, just because I think it would be a fucking awesome musical. And then Uncrustables.
Have y'all seen...
That'd be awesome.
I can't remember who did it, but they did an opera. Oh, I'm going to look this up. There was an opera recently done in the world of Super Mario.
Ooh,
oh, yeah.
With like a full budget.
Oh, my God.
They had, like, a huge budget. I don't remember what it was. Like, the Magic Flute or something. I'm going to look it up. Figaro. Uh-huh. It might have been The Marriage of Figaro.
Oh, shit.
But they do it as, like...
Mario and
Figaro
Luigi.
Figaro is...
In the world.
In the world and is Mario.
Okay.
Right? And, like, it... And, like, it, like, comes out of a tunnel and is, like...
A pipe. Bloop,
bloop, bloop, bloop, bloop, you know, and you're... It's, like... I mean, it sounds... Kind of amazing.
Well,
that's
looking
great.
Up right now,
I mean, if you,
yourselves.
I mean, you know, using CJ's earlier argument, if that brings kids in to see opera, real opera, like
I've only
that
seen
would be
one
badass.
Opera and I fell asleep. So,
I've seen a couple. I've seen some weird ones. Like, I
give
like
me
the
a
weird,
Nintendo opera.
Like the weird avant-garde ones. Those are the ones I kind of dig. You know?
I saw Nixon in China and fell asleep in Act Two. It's a very cool opening, but
it's cool. It's long. That Nixon in China is long.
Yes.
Yeah.
Twas.
Opera. Okay. Random. This is on Nintendo Life. Mm. That's all I could find. Random. Opera group adds Mario to Mozart in Nintendo themed retelling of the Magic Flute. I'm gonna send you this. Oh yeah, Zelda. Okay, Link is in it. It's a whole thing. I'm gonna send you guys. Donkey Kong is up in here. Wario, Mega Man. We got
Mega Man.
Guys,
these are all the hits for me.
Toad.
Princess Peach.
Toad.
Oh, is there some Yoshi? I love some Yoshi.
I see no Yoshi, but I do see a Diddy Kong.
Oh, well, if there's Diddy, there's got to be Yoshi.
I see a Diddy Kong, a Donkey Kong, and what looks like another Kong of some sort who I don't recognize. Anyway, we'll post it on the Instagram. Everyone can check it out.
Yeah.
Awesome.
What else do we want to talk about surrounding Bathtubs Over Broadway? Let's talk about the title. Is that a reference to Bullets Over Broadway? Is that what we're referencing?
I don't know.
I think so. I think it's certainly
a Woody Allen reference up in here.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And I mean, the if anyone's interested in the book that Steve Young then wrote about this, it's called Everything's Coming Up Prophets, if anyone's interested in that. So, yeah, okay. I mean, that makes sense. Bullets Over Broadway, Bathtubs Over Broadway, because they did talk quite a bit about the bathrooms are coming.
I just wanted to shout out Steve himself. Like, he's a great sort of... hero to follow throughout the documentary. And
yeah.
He's so smart and like so subdued. And but then like you just see him light up when he like meets with some of those old composers and they're clanking on the piano and he knows all the words. And it just it was just a feel good. It was just about somebody getting into something and being inspired by it and driven by it and obsessed by it. And it was it was so cool.
Well, we can all relate to that thing too, right? Where it's like, I am a nerd about this thing that nobody else gets. It's like the live recording of the podcast I went to see back in December. None of my friends listened to QAnon Anonymous, but I know all those fucking hosts and I sat in the front row and lost my shit the whole time, you know? I mean, it's cool. I also appreciated too, like, coming to these composers and these performers that maybe didn't necessarily have a big career past this and how much it meant to them of like, holy shit, you know about these musicals. Like, you appreciate my performance. You appreciate my writing. It was very, very cool.
Totally.
It's a hyper endearing musical. Documentary.
Yes.
I highly recommend people check it out. It's truly, truly a good time. It's also well made. The cinematography rules.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
If we're trying to talk film and theater intersection, like it is well filmed. Even the musical numbers are well filmed. Even weirdly, the way they use archival footage is so well edited together and, you know, never feels Ken Burns-y or like, you know, where it's like back in the day, you know, it all feels very like exciting still. And you can see the scope and the audacity of how like large and ridiculous it is. It's really cool. It makes me jealous. I actually started crying watching it in a moment of like, man, I want to do a play. It's been a long time since I've done a play. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, man, I want to be in a musical again. I want to be in a play again. And it just looked so fun. Everyone was always having fun, even if it was the most ridiculous musical ever. And again, like you said, Sky, I think this is what it all comes back to, is that artists were getting paid to do what they loved for a purpose, and then it was gone with the wind. It was gone forever, you know, dust in the wind. So all we are in dying. Is there anything else you guys want to say about it before we get the fic out of here?
Thanks for watching this with me. That was fun.
I was going to thank you for bringing it up. It's kind of a perfect fit for us and what we're doing this season. And it was great just to sit down and watch it again. And I had a good time.
Do we want to, should we be done? I miss you guys.
I know.
I miss you too. I've got a spotlight.
Well, maybe we should just spotlight some LA theater and otherwise.
Yeah.
LA Spotlight.
Chicken Stories by Marcus Fulmar. It's at the Broadwater Main Stage through the 18th of August. The description I have is about so much more than chicken. It's in the top 10 for LA Stage Raw, so it comes highly recommended. And you can get tickets on Eventbrite. Chicken Stories.
It's a series of stories about how people are brought together because of chicken. And so on opening night, they had like a huge spread out on the street.
I love chicken.
We're giving out fried chicken and grilling chicken. And and it's got a lot of energy behind it and it's really cool. So I'm going to see it next week when I get back. But I want to just give a huge shout out to both CJ and Bailey for this Fringe thing that we did. I produced 3 shows and directed one of them for Fringe, and they just, by the time you hear this, both all of the shows will have been ended. Extensions finished. All of it is done. And so
light at the end of the tunnel for you.
And I'm so honored. Shout out to Byron and Sydney for the amazing work on Tight 5, which is just a fantastic one-person show about a black man and his time in the American theater. And it is stinging and hilarious and beautiful. And And then CJ and for everybody involved with Planet Earth Farewell Concert, and then Bailey for co-creating the show is surrounded by true events with Pam,
which I got to see when I was back in LA.
Yeah,
so good.
It was fantastic. I'm really glad I got to see it. I saw also, like, Fringe is such a, and we said this on the Fringe episode, Fringe is such an amazing tool for seeing what needs to be, like, tweaked and whatever. Yeah. And so it was obvious. I was like, okay, cool. I know what can be worked on to make this, like, a truly great show.
Yeah.
And Pam and I got to talk about it, and we both agreed. And I think it's just, it's got legs. We're going to see where it goes.
For sure.
I am seeing
Hey, and Leggett, thanks for all of your work, too.
Oh, yeah, thanks, guy. You did a lot. You did a fuck ton.
Thanks.
Thank you.
A metric fuck ton. You can measure it.
Yeah.
I, this weekend, am seeing a show that is headed to Broadway.
Mm.
My friend is a swing in it, and so he's, I'm going to hang out with him before and after, but Travis Leland, shout out to Travis Leland, who I met doing my first show in Los Angeles, Damn Yankees, at Five Star Theatricals. I played Smokey, the catcher, who has a few little, you know, moments in there, and he was Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe, and we became very good buds, and have, you know, run into each other at a lot of things, but never really got to work together again. We did a little bit of like a writing club together for a bit, but that's about it. And I've been wanting to connect with him, but he's in Boston doing Queen of Versailles with Kristen Chenoweth and F. Murray Abraham.
Oh,
holy
right
shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They are in fact going to Broadway. So if you're in the Boston area and want to check that out before it heads to Broadway, apparently it's like a 3-hour musical. It's real big. But we're going to see it this weekend, and we're going backstage with them. And
cool.
We get to meet Kristen and things like that. So it's a very exciting show. Go check it out. That's my spotlight. Should we get the fuck out of here?
Yeah. What are we doing next?
Next is a Bailey choice. Bailey pick. We're doing the Charlie Kaufman film, what he calls his horror film. it is called, although it is not a horror film.
It's not, but I see what he's doing there.
But in the same way that Beau is Afraid maybe would be considered one. Yeah. It is called Schenectady, New York. Not Schenectady, which is what a lot of people want to say.
Mm-hmm.
If you're just reading it wrong, Synodosh.
Yeah.
No, it is Schenectady. Like the literary term, Schenectady. Uh-huh. Sorry, I said it. I mixed two words. Schenectady, New York. Philip Seymour Hoffman, Diane Wiest, and it's one of my probably in my top five movies of all time. For anyone who doesn't know what a schenectady is, it's a figure of speech in which the name of a part is used to stand for the whole.
Nah.
The whole for a part. Mm-hmm. The general for the specific, or the material for the thing made from it. You'll see. Watch the movie. We're doing that next time. And then, Scott, what was your pick? I forgot already.
Oh, I can't remember. I'll circle back on the next one.
We said it last time. So go.
I can't remember. You had that big list, and now I can't remember.
You chose something from the list, yeah, and we all agreed that it was exciting. I will find it from last time, and you can all just wait until we announce it next time. But thank you for joining us for Theater season what? Five?
69.
Yeah, we appreciate y'all's patience in between episodes. We've had some really amazing feedback on the Instagram. In fact, I forgot. I was going to read a couple things from the Insta. Do you guys mind if I do that?
Not at all. Go for it.
Okay, let me double check this. We've been interacting, obviously, like, we have some great people that like to talk to us. Mm-hmm. Austin Almond being
Austin.
One of them.
Hi, Austin.
We stand a legend. I've also been in touch with someone named Connor McShane, who, if you don't know Connor McShane, we repost him a lot on the Instagram story, but he has an amazing TikTok with a ton of followers. We're going to get him on the podcast. He's already agreed to it.
Mm.
But his whole thing is he does, like, the worst person you know auditions for a musical. The worst person you know
gets the lead role.
person you know, and so he does these impressions of these really awful theater people, and he is genuinely genius. They are absolutely hilarious. But he and I have been connecting on TikTok. We're going to get him on the pod. But he had nothing but nice things to say about the pod, which I appreciate. Thanks. There's also someone who reached out recently named Julian. Julian reached out and basically was he had admitted that he is the one who wrote that amazing review for us a while back that was sort of the Beckett references.
Yeah. Blah, thanks, blah, blah, Julian. Blah, blah.
Yeah. Yeah, and we never knew who that was, and we kind of always were like, oh, it must be a friend being anonymous. And no, this is someone who found us organically. I believe he said he found us actually through the musical theater podcast with Jeffrey Parsons, which I did maybe a year or two ago now. We covered Taboo. So that was all very exciting, but he sent some very kind words. Let me see if any of this is worth reading. It might have been. He says, it's great to meet you across the vast void of this social media platform. I don't know if you will recall, but he's a great writer, by the way, and loves Sondheim. I don't know if you'll recall, but there was a review written for you guys on Apple Podcasts with the header name Not Lucky. That was me. You read it on one of your episodes. It was such a delight. Please know that everything I wrote in that review still rings as true as ever. Aww. Julian, I hope it's okay that I'm reading this on the pod. I just realized I didn't ask you, but we do appreciate the words. And then, you know, just has great things to say from there. Found our podcast first. Oh, I see. I asked, did you find it from the musical theater podcast? And he says, I actually found your podcast first, probably just by searching theater podcasts on Apple Podcasts. So that's great. And we appreciate that. And then he had been listening to us for about a year before he even started Jeffrey's pod.
Oh, right on.
Listened to that episode and realized that I had been on it. Anyway, there's a bunch on here. I don't know. He's been so great, and he's interacted with me on my personal Instagram as well, and like is becoming kind of a friend. It's amazing.
Cool.
So this podcast is
bringing
people together. Thanks, Julian. But we've been getting such good engagement from y'all, so please keep engaging. If you write us a review, we will read it, even if it's a trash review that just rips us apart.
Oh, the guy that said we're a painful waste of time. I'm still waiting to find out if he's single and available.
You know what? You love that shit. I did re-listen to that episode that he referenced, because we got this, you know, you go back to a few episodes, y'all, and we got this really intense reviews, one star, and the guy was like, this is the worst fucking podcast, these three idiots. And he specifically referenced the Edward Albee miniseries.
Oh, yeah. He was an
and
Edward
so
Albee
I went
stan.
Back and listened to it. And it is true. It is in a time where we were doing multiple episodes on one playwright. So we are bullshitty for like 30 minutes. Like, bullshit. Which is what we used to do. We still do. We did it today.
That's half of Albee's writing. Bullshit.
Half of Albee's writing. Shit. And I think he was a big Albee fan.
Yes.
No, agreed. I think he was a big Albee fan. Just like if somebody listened to our Lin-Manuel Miranda or our, you know, they're going to find episodes where we're being really harsh because we are wont to be. And I think, you know, he just didn't like that we don't dive as deep and as academic into the thing that he likes that we barely like, if not think is meh. So anyway, write us a review, subscribe, review, all that kind of shit.
Do y'all have questions or comments? Please reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott,
like Julian and Austin and people.
Yeah,
and
good
stuff.
People. Thank you, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson. Ryan Thomas Johnson writes our theme song, and our fucking theme song is better than your fucking theme song. So suck it. Yeah. He also writes all of our stingers.
It is true.
He also writes all of our stingers, and he's a fantastic human being. And finally, to the great award-winning playwright Eugene Ionesco.
You guys hear that rhinoceros?
He writes every one of our episodes, and he doesn't even know it. But one day, in the afterlife, we will buy you a drink, Mr. Ionesco. I don't know what I'm doing there, but
subscribe, rate, review. It really does help. Go read an Ionesco play so you get what we're doing. We're not doing anything there. We're just saying that we're absurd. We love you guys.
Yeah. Peace out.
Yeah.
Roll back the rock to the dawn of time. Man, sing this song with me. Say, roll back the rock. Roll back the rock. Turn back the clock. Turn back the clock. Roll back the rock to the dawn of time. And sing this song with me. Yeah, turn back the clock. Baby, you can't see why the 20th century appeals to me. So much to learn and so much to do and a zillion wonderful things to chew. Roll the rock, roll back the rock to burn back the clock, turn back the clock, roll back the rock to the dawn of time and sing this song with me.
Woo!
Later, everybody.
The theater, the theater.
Sing out, Louis!
Theater, theater.